The late W. J. Crawford, D. S. C., in his books, The Reality of Psychic Phenomena, 1916, Experiments in the Psychical Science, 1918, Psychic Structures, 1921, describes the painstaking and masterly researches he undertook into such phenomena as table lifting, or levitation, and rapping. For full details, students are referred to those books, it being possible here to give a brief summary of such results as are directly pertinent to our present study. During all the experiments, the medium was fully conscious. W. J. Crawford approached the problems of table lifting, etc., purely as problems of mechanics, and, by means of force registering appliances, both mechanical and electrical, he succeeded in discovering, by deduction from his observations, the modus operandi of the psychic structures employed. At a much later stage, he was able completely to verify his deductions by direct vision and by photography, as will be explained in due course. Briefly, it was found that the ectoplasm, exuding from the medium, was prepared and shaped by the operators who control the production of the phenomena, into what he terms rods. These rods or bars are attached at one end to the medium, and at the other, by suction, to table legs or other objects, psychic force being then applied through the rods, and tables, etc., moved in various ways, without any purely physical contact with any person present. Raps and many other noises are produced by the rod striking on floor, table, a bell, etc. By far the greater portion of the ectoplasm is usually obtained from the medium, though this is supplemented by a small portion from all, or most, of the other sitters present. The ectoplasm can sometimes, even though quite invisible to ordinary sight, be felt. It is described as clammy, cold, reptilian, almost oily, as though the air were mixed with particles of dead and disagreeable matter. The psychic rods issuing from the medium may vary in diameter at their extremities from 1/2 inch to 7 or 8 inches, and the free end of each rod seems able to assume various shapes and degrees of hardness. The end may be flat or convex, circular or oval, it may be soft as the flesh of a baby, or as hard as iron. The body of the rod feels solid a few inches from the free end, but then becomes intangible, though it resists, pulls, pushes, shear and torque. In this intangible portion, nevertheless, a flow of cold, spore-like particles can be felt, the flow being outwards from the medium. There appears to be reason to believe that in some cases, though not in levitations, there is a complete circulation of etheric matter out from the medium and back to her again at a different part of the body. The condition of the end of the rod as regards size and hardness can be varied on demand. The larger rods are usually fairly soft at the end, the smaller ones only becoming dense and hard. W. J. Crawford considers it probable that the rods consist of a bundle of fine threads, intimately connected and adhering to one another. The psychic force passes along the threads, stiffening the whole structure into a rigid girder, which can then be moved as desired by forces applied within the body of the medium. Certain experiments seem to indicate that the end of a rod consists of a thick and more or less elastic film or skin, stretched over a thin, somewhat serrated, elastic frame. The elasticity of the film is limited, and if too highly stressed, the film may rupture, leaving the serrated frame exposed. The fact that an electroscope can be discharged by being touched by a rod indicates that the rod acts as a conductor of high-tension electricity, discharging to Earth through the medium's body to which it is attached. On the other hand, a rod placed across the terminals of a bell circuit does not cause the bell to ring, thus showing that it offers higher resistance to low-tension current. White light usually destroys rod formations, even rays reflected from a surface on which psychic force is exerted interfere with the phenomena. Red light, however, if not too strong, does not appear to injure the psychic structure, neither does light emanating from luminous paint which has been exposed for some hours to sunlight. Usually the structures are quite invisible, though occasionally glimpses of them may be obtained. The structures have been successfully photographed by flashlight, but great care must be taken not to injure the medium. The shock to the medium when the flashlight impinges on the ectoplasm is much greater when the structure is under stress than when it is not stressed. The large number of photographs taken confirm in every detail the conclusions arrived at by deduction from the phenomena themselves. The rigidity of a rod varies with the amount of light to which it is subjected, the hard end being, as it were, partially melted when exposed to light. In the case of objects being moved by psychic force, there are two principal methods employed. In the first, one or more rods are projected from the medium, very frequently from the feet or ankles, sometimes from the lower part of the trunk, and are attached direct to the object to be moved, thus forming cantilevers. When tables are moved horizontally, the rods would usually be attached to the table legs, where they are lifted into the air. The rod or rods are often spread out like a mushroom at the ends and attached to the undersurface of the table. In the second method, the rod or rods projecting from the medium are attached to the floor, and from the point of attachment they are continued to the object to be moved, thus forming no longer a cantilever but something similar to a lever of the first order, the fulcrum being between the weight and the power. Rods may be either straight or curved. They may also be held suspended in the air in a rigid condition, thus showing that they do not require to be pressing on material bodies in order to remain rigid. In the case of the cantilever method, the whole of the mechanical stress is transferred to the medium, or, more accurately, the greater portion to the medium, and a much smaller portion to the sitters. This can be ascertained by ordinary mechanical appliances, such as weighing machines and spring balances. If a table is levitated, for example, by means of a cantilever, the weight of the medium will be increased by about 95% of the weight of the table, and that of the other sitters proportionately. When, on the other hand, the rods are attached to the floor, the weight of a levitated table is transmitted direct to the floor, and the medium's weight, instead of being increased, is decreased, the decrease being due to the weight of the ectoplasm forming the rod, one end of which rests on the floor. When force is transmitted along a rod in order to hold an object, such as a table, firmly to the floor, the weight of the medium has been observed to be reduced by as much as 35.5 pounds. On another occasion, when the ectoplasmic structure was not stressed, the weight of the medium has been reduced by 54.5 pounds, nearly half the normal weight of the medium. Cantilevers are usually employed to move or lift light objects, but for heavy objects or for the transmission of great force, the rod or rods are attached to the floor. Often a force approximating to 100 weight is exerted. During levitation of objects, the stress on the medium is often apparent in the stiffness and even iron-like rigidity of the muscles, principally of the arms, but also of the whole muscular system. Later in his investigations, however, W.J. Crawford found that the muscular rigidity had apparently entirely disappeared. The production of these phenomena appears to result in a permanent loss of weight, both of mediums and sitters, but only to the extent of a few ounces. The sitters may lose more weight than the medium. As a rule, the placing of any material object within the space occupied by a rod immediately breaks the line of communication, destroying the rod, as a rod. A thin object, however, such as a pencil, may be passed through the vertical portion of a rod with impunity, but not through the portion between the medium and the table. Interference with this portion may cause physical injury to the medium. In order to make it possible for a rod to touch or adhere to, for example, a floor or table, the end of the rod has to be specially prepared, being made denser than the rest of the rod. The process appears to be troublesome, or at least to consume time and force. Consequently, the gripping portions of a structure are always kept to the minimum. The method of gripping by suction, as can easily be demonstrated by soft clay, referred to below. Sometimes the suckers can be heard slipping over the surface of wood, or taking new grips. Many instances, as well as photographs, are given by W.J. Crawford, of impressions on putty or soft clay, produced by impact of rods. These impressions are often covered with marks similar to the fabric of the medium's stockings. The resemblance, however, is superficial, it being impossible to produce such impressions by actually pressing a stockinged foot onto the clay. The impression made by the rod is much sharper than can be obtained by ordinary means, and is such as could be obtained if a fine viscous material were to cover the stocking fabric, to harden, and then to be pressed on the clay. Further, the stocking marks may be greatly modified, the delicate pattern and tracery of the threads may be distorted, thickened, partly covered over, or broken, though still remaining recognizable as that of the stocking fabric. The deduction is that the ectoplasm is at first in a state like that of a semi-liquid, that it oozes through and round the holes in the fabric and partly sets on the outside of the stocking. It is of a glutinous, fibrous nature, and takes almost the exact form of the fabric. It is then pulled off the stocking and built round the end of the rod. For a large impression, the skin is thickened and strengthened by the addition of more materializing matter, and thus the original imprint may be twisted, distorted, or partially obliterated. Similarly, finger impressions may be made by a rod, though these may be different in size from normal ones, and may be much more clearly and regularly cut than would be possible with ordinary finger impressions. Raps, ranging from the slightest taps to blows of sledgehammer strength, as well as many other sounds, are produced by semi-flexible rods, with suitably prepared ends, being struck against material objects. The production of raps is accompanied by a decrease of the medium's weight, the amount of decrease, which may be as much as 20 pounds, or more, being apparently directly proportional to the intensity of the rap. The reason is apparent. The rods being formed of matter from the medium's body, the striking of such matter on the floor, etc., necessarily transfers some of the medium's total weight through the rod to the floor. The loss of weight is temporary only, being restored when the material of the rods returns to the medium. The production of raps causes a mechanical reaction on the medium, as though she were being pushed backwards or struck. This reaction may cause her to make slight motions with her feet. The stress on the medium, however, is nothing like that caused by the levitation of objects. Heavy blows, produced by a large rod, are not usually delivered quickly. Light raps, however, usually produced by two or more thin rods, may be produced with incredible rapidity, the operators appearing to have great command over the rods. In general, the production of these phenomena throws stress on all the sitters, as is apparent by spasmodic jerks, sometimes quite severe, which go round the whole circle previous to levitation. It would appear that the process of loosening and removing etheric matter from the bodies of the sitters takes place in jerks, and, to some extent, affects them altogether. W.J. Crawford reports that an entity, purporting to have been whilst alive a medical man, and so to speak through the medium, on this occasion entranced for the purpose, stated that there are two kinds of substance used in the production of phenomena. One is taken in comparatively large quantities from the medium and sitters, all, or nearly all, being returned to them at the close of a séance. The other can be obtained only from the medium, and as it consists of the most vital material from the interior of her nerve cells, it can be taken only in minute quantities without injury to the medium. Its structure is broken up by the phenomena, and therefore it cannot be returned to the medium. This statement has not been verified or confirmed in any way and is given purely on its merits. W. J. Crawford devised and used with great success the staining method of tracing the movements of ectoplasm. Ectoplasm possessing the property of adhering strongly to such a substance as powdered carmine, the latter is placed in its path, when a colored track will be found. By this means, it was discovered that ectoplasm issues from and returns to the lower part of the trunk of the medium. It has considerable consistency, for it has a strong tearing action on the stockings and of other clothing and will sometimes pull out whole threads, several inches long, from a stocking, carry, and deposit the same in a vessel of clay placed some distance from the medium's feet. The ectoplasm follows a path down the legs and enters the shoes, passing between stocking and shoe, wherever there is space. If it has picked up dye on its way, it will deposit this at any place where foot, stocking and shoe are in close contact, that is, where there is not sufficient room for it to pass. The solidification, as well as the dematerialization, of the hard end of a rod is effected immediately the rod issues from the medium's body. For this reason, the free end of the rod, unless it be one of the thinnest, cannot penetrate closely woven cloth, or even wire netting of 1-inch mesh, if placed more than 1 inch or 2 in front of the medium. If such screens, however, are very close to the medium's body, an imperfect materialization of the end of the rod may take place and limited psychic phenomena may occur. The evolution of ectoplasm from the body of a medium is accompanied by strong muscular movements all over the body, and the fleshy parts of the body, especially from the waist downwards, become reduced in size, as through the flesh had caved in. W. J. Crawford is convinced that in the production of seance room phenomena there are at least two substances employed: 1, a component, forming the basic part of the psychic structure, which is invisible, impalpable, and generally outside the range of physical things altogether, and, 2, a whitish, transparent, nebulous substance, mixed with, 1, in order to enable, 1, to act on physical matter, 2, he considers, is in all probability identical with the material used in materialization phenomena. Many phenomena of materialization are described, with that scrupulous and minute attention to detail so characteristic of German investigators, in a large work entitled Phenomena of Materialization, by Baron von Schrenck-Notzing, 1913, and translated by E. Fourniard Alp, D.S.C., 1920. In addition, to elaborate descriptions of large numbers of seances and phenomena, there are given some 200 photographs of materialized forms, or apparitions of many kinds, ranging from threads or masses of ectoplasm to fully formed faces. The main conclusions may be epitomized as follows. These are taken largely, for convenience, from a lecture on supernormal physiology and the phenomena of ideoplastics, by Dr. Gustave Jelly, a Paris psychologist and physician, which is printed at the end of Baron Notzing's book. From the body of the medium there emanates a substance which at first is amorphous or polymorphous. It may appear as ductile dough, a true protoplasmic mass, a kind of shaking jelly, simple lumps, thin threads, cords, narrow rigid rays, a broadband, a membrane, fabric, woven material or net with fringes and rucks. The thread, or fiber-like nature of the substance has frequently been observed. It may be white, black or gray, sometimes all three appearing together. White is perhaps the most frequent. It appears to be luminous. Usually it seems to be odorless, though sometimes it may have a peculiar smell, impossible to describe. There seems no doubt that it is subject to the influence of gravity. To the touch, it may be moist and cold, viscous and sticky, more rarely dry and hard. When expanded it is soft and slightly elastic. When formed as cords it is hard, knotty and fibrous. It may feel like a spider's web passing over the hand. The threads are both rigid and elastic. It is mobile, with a creeping, reptilian motion, though sometimes it moves suddenly and quickly. A draft may set it in motion. Touching it produces a painful reaction on the medium. It is extremely sensitive and appears and disappears with lightning rapidity. It is usually sensitive to light, though sometimes the phenomena will withstand full daylight. Flashlight photographs of it can be taken, though the flash acts like a sudden blow on the medium. During the production of the phenomena, the cabinet, containing the medium, is usually in darkness, but the curtains are frequently drawn aside, and outside the cabinet, red light is used, and sometimes even white light up to 100 candle power. The substance has an irresistible tendency towards organization. It assumes many forms, sometimes indefinite and non-organized, but most frequently organic. Fingers, including nails, all perfectly modeled, complete hands, faces, and other shapes may be formed. The substance emanates from the whole body of the medium, but especially from the natural orifices and extremities, from the top of the head, the breasts, and the fingertips. The most usual origin, and most easily observed, is the mouth, the inner surface of the cheeks, the gums and the roof. The materialized forms have a certain independence, a hand, for example, being able to move its fingers and grasp the hand of the observer, though sometimes the human skin seems to repel the phantoms. The structures are sometimes smaller than in nature, being really miniatures. The back of the materializations has been observed to be without organic form, being merely a mass of amorphous substance, the forms containing a minimum of substance necessary to make them appear real. The forms may disappear very gradually, fading away, or almost instantaneously. During the whole time it is clear that the forms are in physiological and psychical connection with the medium, the sensation reflex of the structures coalescing with that of the medium. Thus, a pin inserted into the substance would cause pain to the medium. It seems that the substance can be influenced both by the general direction and the subject matter of the thoughts of the sitters. In addition, the medium, usually in the hypnotic state, is exceedingly open to the influence of suggestion. Pieces of materialized forms have been seized in a porcelain dish and retained. On one occasion, when examined afterwards, two pieces of skin were found which, under the microscope, were recognized as human. On another occasion, 3 or 4 cc of a transparent liquid, without air bubbles, were found. Analysis revealed a colorless, slightly turbid, non-viscous, odorless liquid, slightly alkaline, with a whitish precipitate. The microscope disclosed the components of cell detritus and saliva, the substance evidently originating from the mouth. On yet another occasion, a bundle of hair, not in any way resembling the darker hair of the medium, was found, the hand of the observer being covered with mucus and moisture. In addition, fragments of other substances are sometimes found, such as face powder or shreds of the medium's clothing. Chapter 25 Conclusion. Considerable as is the total of information at present available regarding man's etheric body and etheric phenomena in general, nevertheless, the serious student will at once perceive that the field for future research is vastly greater than the fragments of it which have so far been explored. In view of the intimate bearing which the structure, nourishment and health of the etheric body have on physical health, and on the functioning, not only of the physical body, but also of the other bodies in their connection with the physical, it is abundantly evident that research into every class of etheric phenomena should lead to discoveries of great scientific interest and beneficent import to man. A number of methods of conducting such research is open to us. First, we have the method of direct clairvoyant observation, at different levels, it being probable, in view of the rapid development of certain sections of the human race at the present time, that large numbers of persons will find themselves, in the not distant future, in possession of etheric faculties. In addition to etheric faculties, normally unfolded in the ordinary course of evolution, Drive Kilner's line of work appears to indicate that these faculties may be stimulated by the use of screens, such as he employed, and possibly by other physical means yet to be devised. Both mesmerism and hypnotism might also, with adequate safeguards, be employed to make available latent etheric faculty. The use of photography may in the future become very extensive and important, the salts used in the photographic plate being sensitive to wavelengths and degrees of light beyond the reach of the normal eye. A further method of research, using ultraviolet light, also offers great promise. A laboratory for this purpose has recently been opened at Leeds through the initiative and fasting enterprise of some members of the Theosophical Society in that town. The methods employed by W. J. Crawford may well be pursued by other workers, and additions thus be made to the exceedingly valuable results obtained by the able investigator named. As to the desirability of utilizing the seance room for obtaining such materialization phenomena as those obtained, for example, by Baron von Notzing, there is likely to be divergence of opinion. It is fairly generally admitted that phenomena of this nature may easily be highly injurious to the medium, both physically and in other ways, and there is also something distinctly unsavory about the materializations produced by these means. On the other hand, it may be urged that if mediums are willing to sacrifice themselves in the cause of science, science is justified in accepting such sacrifices, and, further, that science as such has no concern with the savoriness, or otherwise, of natural phenomena. It seems fairly certain, however, that the highest spiritual teachers of the present day do not look with favor on the seance room. Yet it may be argued that in other ages the use of Vestal Virgins, soothsayers, prophets and other mediums, received the sanction and approval of high authorities. The present writer, therefore, refrains from offering any dogmatic conclusion on this point. The possibility of utilizing knowledge of etheric phenomena for purposes of healing would appear to be almost limitless. For many cases of disease, physical, emotional and mental, the employment of vital or magnetic healing, and also mesmerism and hypnotism, would seem to be in line with the general progress of thought in this direction. In particular, the use of mesmerism to produce anesthesia for surgical or other purposes, in place of ether, gas, or chloroform, would appear to possess many recommendations. It may also be surmised that the science of osteopathy, in conjunction with the study of the force centers and the flow of vitality in the human body, should lead to valuable results. The remarkable discoveries of Dr. Abrams, which appear to have been accepted, at least partially, by the medical profession, would seem to be capable of conferring almost incalculable benefit on the disease-ridden human race of today. Although it is not, the present writer believes, rigidly proved, yet it would appear to be almost certain that the methods employed in the Abrams system act, directly or indirectly, on and through the etheric body. The recent revival of healing by various Christian churches would also seem to have a great future, and there can be little doubt that such methods, while far from being wholly physical, yet do work, to some extent, through etheric matter. The possibility of utilizing our knowledge of etheric phenomena extends, however, even further afield than is roughly indicated above. Thus it seems more than probable that an important, and hitherto almost unrecognized, factor in the treatment of disease and the preservation of health would derive from the etheric, apart from the purely physical properties of drugs, waters, gases, the air, emanations of soils and minerals, fruit, flowers and trees. It is possible in the future that we may discover health resorts, either on land, lake or sea, which depend for their curative powers on their etheric properties. The attention which has recently been devoted to the wider use of sunlight obviously has a close bearing on what we know concerning the emanations of prana from the sun, and its diffusion in the atmosphere, and its absorption by living beings. It may be that further knowledge of etheric and vital phenomena may lead to a profound change of attitude towards the use in medicine and dietetics of substances which have passed through, or are derived from, animal organisms. It is a reasonable conjecture that those elusive substances known as vitamins may owe their beneficent properties to the presence in them, in one form or another of prana, or possibly to the quality of the etheric matter they contain. A recognition of the fact that the vitality of the body is derived, not from food, but direct from the atmosphere, may well lead to a radical change in the dietetic treatment of sick persons, and also to a much greater use of fasting as a curative energy. Those who are familiar with the literature of fasting will no doubt be aware that several writers on this interesting subject have already deduced from actual observation that the connection between assimilation of food and the acquirement of vital energy is very far from being simple or direct. It is now generally recognized that the use of electricity for curative purposes has not fulfilled all that was at first hoped for it. It may be that a deeper knowledge of etheric phenomena will be of assistance in devising better methods of utilizing electricity for curative purposes. The association of electricity with etheric matter, of which the etheric double is composed, is a phenomenon which may thus be turned to valuable account. In fact, it would scarcely be too much to say, that in the future the etheric body, being the habitat, so to say, of a life principle in its physical aspect, may receive as much attention as, or even more than, is now given to the material physical body. The utilization eventually, of energy associated with the physical ether, for many purposes, is obvious, and needs no insistence here. The student of occultism, however, will recollect the warning that men will not be permitted to release the almost incalculable forces latent in atomic matter until it is assured that such forces will be used beneficently, and not for the purposes of destruction, as has unfortunately happened in the case of so many discoveries in the past. It is further evident that the discovery of the etheric grades of matter will open up new vistas in chemistry and physics, and may even be turned to useful account in the production of food substances of all kinds, of electrical conductors or insulators, materials for clothing, and many other substances used in daily life.